Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio, and we are continuing on our series about inside real estate, and I'm here with my buddy, Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
I'm doing well, man. Have you bought any real estate since our last show?
No, I have not. The last time I bought real estate was my home.
We're getting all these insider 96. Tips. It's probably not even legal for us to buy real estate anymore. We're so knowledgeable now, right?
It's an unfair advantage. So we've got some big news. You're getting closer, inching closer to your big moment in the sun with Monica. What's her name? Pearson?
That's right. We're like T minus 4 days. Yeah, Monica Pearson. I don't know what happened to the Kaufman. I don't know if that guy's out of the picture or what the deal is. So I've been just saying Monica Pearson, just like they say in the papers.
Right.
But yeah, Monica and I are emceeing the 101 Best and Brightest deal that's at Monday at Marriott Century Center and
off Claremont.
Yeah, that's going to be fun stuff. I gotta borrow a jacket from somebody. You know any short, fat people that would loan me their jacket for a day?
Maybe they have those kind of stores where you can rent them.
Yeah. But we're doing the remote broadcast out there, too, so we're going to interview not just the winners, but the losers, too. I don't know.
Everybody.
Everybody's invited, right?
Line,
that yeah, that'll be fun.
We can wrangle. But today's show is kind of interesting. We're talking about residential real estate. We tend to, you know, mostly B2B stuff, but this is residential.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on in that world. And first up on the show today is a gentleman with Dickinson Law Group, Mr. Matt Dickinson, the man himself. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stone and Lee.
Stone and
Lee.
Let
me get that right. Let me write that down.
That's right, and Dwight's in the back.
Yeah.
Now, we're delighted to have you, man. Get us updated. What's happening in the world of residential real estate?
Sure. Well, it's a hot topic right now, especially with the economy being the only news with the upcoming elections and whatnot. I can tell you, me and my co-guest here, Brad Hartman with Cornerstone Mortgage, we're kind of sergeants on the ground, if you will. We're not going to talk to you real high end like an economist would, but sometimes your foot soldiers have a better indication of what's actually happening in real time. You know, I started my practice in July of 2007. And if you know much about real estate, you could say, Matt, you're definitely not a visionary. That was not a great time to go
begin,
into
right?
residential real estate. Right. But that being said, when revenues were going to be low for our closing law firm, we had to be very, very delicate and careful on how we grew our business. And very, very careful and keeping our eyes on what the economy was doing, what the market was doing. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not going to be very doom and gloom. I know that gets headlines and better, but I'm very, very optimistic about the future, specifically residential real estate.
Really?
There's a number of reasons for that. The USA Today last week on the front page had a headline talking about the foreclosure wave has crested. We've seen 8 months consecutively now where the number of foreclosures in this country have gone down. We see that on the front lines, and I'll tell you, one thing that I think is incredibly interesting and probably a better indicator that our economy is doing better than what forecasters are saying is that when the foreclosure happens, the banks sell that piece of property to an investor, right? And I call this the Great Reset. The banks, we were way upside down. Now they're selling this property to an investor for pennies on the dollar. And that's fine. And that sale from the investor to the bank is not necessarily a good indication that the economy is improving. Why? Because it's a deal. And there are people with cash out there that just want a deal. But what we're starting to see now is that second sale, that A to B, that B to C transaction. Now that investor's put some money into that piece of property, and now they're selling to who? They're selling to new home buyers, new people that are in the market that weren't there before. And now we have a true value for what that house should be. That, you know, Decatur $250,000 house that's just sold for, you know, $70,000 on the courthouse steps. Somebody put in $20,000 of money to rehab, and they just sold it for $150,000. That 150 is a true value.
That's a real number.
That's a real number. Yeah, that's not inflated. That's a great place to start. That means that first home buyer, that new person is not going to be upside down. And for our economy, let's face it, technology is not our foundation. Manufacturing used to be is not our foundation anymore. Real estate is our foundation. Now we have this nice, stable, accurately valued homes. I'm telling you, that's the first step.
So have bankers, their inventory is extremely low now, or are they still sitting on a ton of inventory?
They have a lot of inventory. And I should have said banking is not what our country was founded on either. So, you know, I'm not so much concerned there. And I don't do foreclosure work. A lot of real estate firms will be the foreclosing attorney. They'll keep the title work and do that, as I said, the B2C transaction. I don't do foreclosure work, and for that reason, there's not an armed guard sitting outside of my office, yeah, which some actually have here
in
town.
Can you actually make a living as a closing attorney, or do you have to get drug dealers off in your spare time? Or can that be your practice, just be a closing attorney?
Stone, that is a great question. Now, I tell you what, in July of 2007, I would have painted your house. It didn't matter. I would have done whatever. But like I said, I had an opportunity. I said I was there, and I was trying to organically grow, not to use an 80s buzzword, but I wasn't putting on the facade of a large law firm. It was Matthew A. Dickinson PC when we started. It was just me. It was just a closer. I focused
on a vision.
Saying, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Man. Yeah, no, I would do a little bit of everything. But, you know, the KISS method, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Stick with what you're good at. Stick with what you know. We've developed a process that have grown very, very slow. We're not in the ivory tower of law firms, per se. You know, we just got some Class A real estate on Peachtree, but that's 4 years in the making. We've been in, you know, mom-and-pop places, and Brad's known me since we've been there. But to answer your question, no, I don't want anybody to go out there to be a real estate attorney, because I'm going after market share. So don't do it. It's not a good career choice for
now,
you.
Now, what makes a good closing attorney? Because, you know, like, you know, an attorney's like, yeah, I can do it. What do you need? Trademark? Patent? You know, I'm your guy.
That's a good question. I would say my charming personality is what makes me. No, honestly, because we were so slow for a couple of years, we had an opportunity to work on our process. I really think as a closing attorney, more so like a manufacturing company than actual, you know, law firm or patent lawyer.
Right.
I'm not going to draft you a 14-page complaint or do a legal opinion on something. We're going to make sure title is clear on behalf of the buyer's lender. We're going to facilitate the closing. We're going to organize with, like, real estate agents and whatnot. Our process got fixed basically out of necessity because we had too much time on our hands to do anything else. So we've worked on this process where it's fairly streamlined and probably, and Brad could probably be a better endorsement than I of why we're being successful. And I'll let you boast about me in a little bit if you'd like to, sir.
I'm ready to go.
Are you ready to go?
I'd like to hear from Brad. Now, Brad, you're with Cornerstone Mortgage.
Yep.
And you guys do a lot of stuff together, right? You got your own little mafia thing going, right?
Absolutely. Right. Matt and I work together on a lot of transactions. To basically go back on what Matt was just talking about, my favorite thing in dealing with Matt is I don't necessarily deal on the back end stuff. You know, I deal with Matt.
What is
the
back end stuff?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, order and title, just basically paperwork.
Right. You're trying to get the loan, right? That's what you're
exactly. Yep. I get the loan. I would send the title order over to Matt. He, you know, his people.
And then you don't have to think about it anymore, right? That's
ideally.
That's ideally.
Yes.
Right?
Less in this market now than ever before, but Matt, yeah, he the back end stuff. They handle that seamlessly, but my favorite part is when we get to the closing. It can be a stressful situation. People are, you know, they're borrowing hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're going to be paying several hundred more over the course of 30 years. Matt keeps it very light. He's, you know, very personable. You know, keeps people, explains the situation, but keeps it casual and makes them not nervous, because I've had some really experiences that sweating.
It's much easier now because you're celebrating every time you have a closing.
So you have like liquor in the office.
I wish. You know what? Maybe if the boom keeps coming here, that's what we'll do. But no, you get little peppermints at my office and that's it. No Godiva chocolates or anything like that.
No champagne. You're not cracking open the champagne.
You know what? That should be part of our
but now I hear stories
model.
All the time of people that have a closing scheduled for Tuesday at 2 and then it doesn't happen. And then it's Friday at 1 and that would drive me absolutely bonkers.
I'll tell you my experience with my closing, in 96. We go to the table, and then there was a different rate on the sheet than the one that we had talked
that's
about.
That's got to be fun.
And then now everybody's there in the room ready to sign documents, and it's like, you said X, this is X plus. They're like, well, you know, here we are. It's late in the game. What do you want to do? Do you want to pay? And then they're trying to figure out ways to make that go away by subtracting things and – that was not a comfortable experience for me.
Ouch.
1996, huh?
Yeah, that was those are the good old days, right?
Yeah, but
that shouldn't
that
happen, guys.
But that happens,
it occasionally
right?
happens, but it really shouldn't if you have a
it doesn't happen with Cornerstone.
It doesn't happen with Cornerstone. No, part of the new RESPA guidelines are disclosure. And you don't have lenders that are tripping over themselves to lend money nowadays. I think probably, and like I said, Brad could probably speak to you a little bit better, but disclosures is the biggest thing. There should not be any
surprises
at the closing table. My job should be really, really easy. Unfortunately, right. Sometimes we do have to herd some cats. We do have to kind of make some last-minute adjustments. To your point about a closing schedule to go on Tuesday that doesn't, odds are the title company or the closing attorney probably didn't schedule it. That was scheduled by a real estate agent that was crossing fingers and hoping that the lender could get their stuff together.
So it's important to have communication between all the parties involved.
All the way across the board a lot of times.
Who's the quarterback in that? Who's the one that's managing that to make sure all those things are going to happen?
Well, I tell you, for the most part, real estate agents like to be the quarterback, but odds are they probably shouldn't be, and that's not a slam on them. They've got the contract. They've got the house. They've done the most important thing for that purchase. But at that point, the money men, meaning the Cornerstone Mortgages and Brad Hartmans of the world, need to communicate with the closing attorney because we know when that actual loan is ready to go, when that money's ready to fund.
Right.
So essentially, the closing manager, and he's giving me a lot of credit. Guys, I sign checks and, pass out peppermints at the closing.
That's your job.
My team is what makes us so efficient.
Sure.
My team are the people that are supposed to coordinate and schedule these closings.
So, Brad, tell me, what is the key to a good, smooth closing? It strikes me that a lot of it has to do with all the work you're doing on the front end. And I guess the best question is, how do I shop for a mortgage company? What am I looking for when I'm considering taking on a mortgage?
Good looks, and that's why Brad is so successful.
That's why I'm on the radio right now. what I would say to my clients that are dealing with myself and then other, looking at other quotes and such, it really comes down to nobody has a magic product. And I tell somebody that if they're getting three quotes and two of them are about the same, one of them's way different, there's something wrong there because nobody has a magic interest rate. We all have, for the most part, the same interest rates.
So you don't have some rich guy that's funding all these things in your back pocket that's going to give me a special deal?
But what I tell them is literally, work with somebody that you feel comfortable with, somebody that you feel like has your best interest at heart and is going to get you, without the shadow of a doubt, is going to tell you one thing. You're going to get to the closing.
Right.
And you're going to see exactly the same thing because in the past, like you talked about, it has been the case where people would do, something would pop up or they'd just do a bait and switch where they'd tell you one thing and give you another. But those people are gone. They're way gone.
Yeah, I'm
sure business.
That this must have weeded out a bunch of people in all aspects of this transaction. Is that so?
All the smart closing attorneys have gone into bankruptcy and those things. but us stubborn ones are still here.
Still there. They pivoted. So is credit tighter, though? I mean, they loaned me money several years ago on, almost no documentation. I worked for myself. I haven't had a job in 30 years. No, no problem. Here you go. And they were going to loan me even more than I was willing to borrow.
I know. I like the way they would say, no, you always get more. You always want more.
Yeah, you always want more. Yeah. That's changed, right?
Well, I deal with people on a daily basis, and they say, well, Brad, the last time I bought a house, such and such, I'm like, have you turned on the news lately? Or, opened up a newspaper. It's changed a lot. But I think, the negative connotation out there is the banks are not lending. I completely think that's false. Just got to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And the biggest part, and kind of go back to what you talked about earlier, what's a good person? Literally somebody that's going to create the right expectations for you as the client. Because if I tell you up front, these are things that we could run into, this issue, these are some things that could happen. When it happens, they're not surprised. They're like, oh, you actually mentioned this. Let's cross this hurdle and get where we need to be.
But do I need now to have 20% down, whereas before I could do it just on a phone call? Yeah, I work at a place that makes $100,000 a year. Okay, here's your house.
I don't know if I even want to call
those. That's exactly how mine went last time.
Yeah, we just show up next week and sign your name a couple places. I don't even know if I want to call those the good old days. It made my job a lot easier, but I mean, banks are lending. Minimum credit scores for an FHA type of mortgage is a 640. So anything above that, and the minimum payment with an FHA mortgage is 3.5%. A conventional loan, a lot of folks are doing 5% down.
So you don't have to have buckets of cash now to make this happen if you have good credit.
Absolutely. Good credit, good work history.
And do you have any tips for people? Maybe their credit isn't so great. Do you help them kind of improve their credit in order to get this deal done?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably on a daily basis, I get folks that aren't able to qualify. Over the last 8 years, I don't even want to even have an estimation how much credit I've looked at, but able to point people in a certain direction.
What's an easy tip to... that maybe people don't know? That,
well, if you're on eHarmony and you have a good credit score, you should include that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's a real... That's good,
for our single
friends. What are some basic points? Literally, pay your bills on time.
Surprise.
but above and beyond that, what I see a lot of times, people will have their credit maxed out, what their available balance is. They'll be really high towards that. Banks look negatively upon that, or credit institutions, when they're above 50% of their available balance, and even better, it looks positive when they're below 30%. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, unfortunately, people that don't have credit won't have good credit. It's one of those things where sometimes I have to tell people, well, you had some bad credit in the past. You're not doing anything positive on your credit now to make it look better. So what you need to do is use these credit cards, pay your gas, get your groceries, pay it off every month, but it's at least going to establish
some kind of
positive
history. So paying it off every
month
is a good thing, or is it better to carry a little bit of a balance and just pay that down,
Certain people probably are better off paying it off every month because certain people have issues with,
self-discipline
paying their debt. Exactly.
He's looking at me the whole time he's saying this. We just met and he knows this stuff about me.
But a lot of times credit will report to the bureaus when you have a balance. So it's not necessarily that you pay it off that it automatically going to report to the bureaus that you have a zero balance.
Right.
So that way it's going to more than likely show that you have some kind of credit.
And then when they're calculating this mythical credit score, that's counting, that's good for you.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Exactly how they get that number is
a very good
question. Yeah.
So how does this work? Stone comes to you. He wants to borrow money to buy a house. I'm coming to you. How did I get to you? And how did I get you out of the Yellow Pages? Somebody referred me to you. How does this typically work?
One of your friends walked up to you and you said, "I'm buying a house." You said, "Oh my God, you got to deal with Brad."
All right. And then when do you get Matt in the picture?
Okay. You're buying a house. You've decided to move forward the process with me. At that point, there's several steps we go through, but one of them is going to be to order title, and that's where Matt comes into the picture, and, he does the stuff on the back end.
We do a title examination on the property that you're looking to purchase, and we find out what liens are on that property. When I say liens, I mean like the seller's mortgage, or if they didn't pay a tax bill, or if they had a deck half built and didn't pay somebody, and there's a materialman's lien on there or something. What we do is we provide a title commitment to your new lender. It says, hey, if you loan Stone this money, and by the way, we don't think he should. He seems very shady and sketchy. But anyways, we say if you loan him this money, we're going to use this money to buy the house, but we will also make sure we pay all of these things off on title so that new bank is in first lien position. So once again, when you decide to not pay your bills anymore, they can foreclose and take the house back as collateral without any issues from another debtor.
But I bet there's some real horror stories of people not getting some of these I's dotted and T's crossed, and some long-lost guy from 50 years ago says, hey, I own half of that swimming pool or whatever.
Worst-case scenario, Stone, the title clearance can actually say that, hey, the guy sold you this house does not own this house, meaning
either he
committed some fraud or maybe he inherited it from his father, and his sister is a part owner, but she's in California. He forged a deed. That's a worst-case scenario, but it's interesting because with real property, if the sister comes back and says, hey, Stone, you just bought a house that I own half, she has a legal title claim to 50% of that value of the house. So, oh, crap, what do we do now?
Now you got to empty that second bedroom.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's why you buy title insurance. The owner purchases at closing a title insurance policy, of which the closing attorney makes a premium as a title agent, and that's a little disclosure on our part.
You're making some money on that.
We're going to make some money on there because we're the ones that are providing that CPL. Sure. Right.
But it's not required, but it's highly recommended for sure.
Well, especially now with all the short sales and foreclosures, there's a lot of title stuff going on. What we found out is that usually the house note is the last thing that people don't pay. What I mean is, you're going to keep your house. You may slack off and not pay that vendor for that deck that you had built. You may slow down. So they're going to pay that bill. So potentially before a foreclosure happens, there's going to be a number of other things that are liens or judgments from credit cards that weren't paid.
Yeah, and so it's okay for him to make some money on this. He's giving us mints at the end.
That's right. They're wonderful peppermints. They're probably about 4 years old.
And so title insurance will pay the sister or just say, nope, you're going to have to get that back to the sister, but at least here's your money back?
You know what? 90% of my experience, if there's a title claim, and knock on wood, I've been doing this 4 years with only one claim. Can you hear that? I'm actually knocking on wood. What they do is they pay off the plaintiff.
Got
because
it.
They're an insurance company. They could pay to litigate it. But at the same time, they're in the business of making money. You know how insurance companies work. So, like I said, we've had one title claim. I'm not proud of that fact, and I'm sure my insurance carrier is going, what are you doing? What are you talking about that for? But when you do high volume,
it's going
to
happen.
Eventually, it's going to happen. I think it's happened to every large closing law firm in town. The best thing about it, though, is that you're insured. That's why you buy the title insurance in case something happens.
Now, when you're going out to market and you're trying to build these relationships, I can see how you guys work together, but who's the... I'm not calling, hey, I'm going to buy a house. Let me call up my closing attorney. So you guys have to be buddies with every real estate agent in town, right?
You just hit the nail on the head. I tell you what, end of last year, I think Brad can kind of attest to this. Last quarter of 2010, interest rates were significantly low. The people that did have equity in their houses, what were they doing? They were refinancing. There was a mini boom in our industry for refinances.
Right.
Well, interest rates are still staying low because the economy is not going as fast as some people would like. But what that's doing is creating a tremendous, tremendous buyer's market. Now, I hate to sound like the used car salesman in the world, but it's a great time to buy. Man, it really is. Properties are at they're at the proper valuation now is what they should be. And interest rates are extremely low. And you know what? You're right. You're not going to Google search for who's going to be my title attorney.
Right. I'm not leading with that. Right?
No, Lee's not going to come look online for me. So I have to go to Brad and say, look, I have an efficient process. We're priced competitively. Right. This is what we do. Now, we do have some synergy because the refinance market is not dead, but it's significantly less. But what we're dealing with now is a pretty decent purchase market. 25% of all the purchases last month in Atlanta were short sales. So you got
what's a short sale?
A short sale is when the bank that has the loan on the existing property is accepting less than what is owed.
Oh, okay. So they're going to take the hit.
The bank is essentially saying, hey, we're going to take this hit because we know we're so upside down. It's better than taking a foreclosure.
Right.
And because of that, you have a buyer that has to be patient. Because it used to be if, you know, Lee and Stone wanted to buy each other's houses, hey, shake, here we go, let's move on, let's go to a closing. Well, now we got to get permission from your short-selling bank. That essentially says, hey, we're going to give you permission to sell this for less money, and we'll deal with what the loss is. And that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother show about what that does for you individually in your credit score.
Well, that's got to tank the credit score, right?
Not as bad as a foreclosure.
Oh, okay.
So it's significantly better.
Choose the evil.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, and to generically throw out some numbers, a foreclosure will ride you for about 7 years, and you may be maybe very difficult to get any type of loan for a car or anything unless you got a bunch of cash sitting around. However, a short sale looks like a charge off on your credit score. You guys are very, very financially disciplined. Maybe not Stone so much, but he probably knows what a charge off is. Essentially, you know, if you don't pay the bill, they say, we're not going to spend the money to collect it. We're going to charge this off and write it on your credit score. Maybe give you a 1099, say, hey, we gave you a valuation for the dollar amount that we forgave. But what's nice about it is that for 2011, I think this is still good to go. Unless you make over $140,000 a year, the amount that's forgiven by the short selling bank, so your lender in this case, Stone, the money that they're forgiving, they give you a 1099 for that difference, but the federal government makes you pay attention to it. They don't make you pay taxes on it.
Uh-huh.
So it only essentially drops your credit score from how long you were delinquent on your loan payments. It'll show up eventually as a, hey, this was charged off. We've settled this debt. It's no longer a debt that's owed.
So that's better than 7 years.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know someone that had a 740 credit score, had some financial difficulty. Actually, a spouse lost income that they used to qualify to buy the house, lost it, and they couldn't pay for it. So essentially, they did a short sale, and the short sale process took them probably about 5 months, 5.5 months, I think. And it can range. But they had a buyer who was wanting to buy this house for 5 months that couldn't close because they knew they were waiting for the process to take place. Yeah. So you gotta be real, real patient if you're gonna be an investor or somebody looking to buy. So don't load up all your belongings in the United van waiting for this closing that may not happen because you do have to get permission.
And then what did their credit score end up being?
It dropped about 80 points. From 740 to, 670, 680.
But that's still in the good range for you to get a loan, right?
What's the FHA requirement right now?
640.
Now, I know most lenders will say, hey, you had a short sale. We're gonna make you wait 2 years.
Right.
But, hey, credit score is like a garden.
Right.
You can pull the fruit off of it. Guess what? You replant it. You show good responsibility. You build it back up. I'm not a big Clark Howard. Credit score is important. but your savings is more important. Your family's well-being is more important.
Right.
Let's look at people that, that
do
loan modifications.
It's hard to go to the grocery store and buy stuff with your credit
score. That's right. That's right. Well, and we used to do, like I said, we were slow. Back when we were working on our process, mm-hmm. we did probably 24 pro bono loan modifications mm-hmm. where people had a temporary loss in income, or what we thought was going to be a temporary loss in income. And we would modify these with the bank's help. But we get to a point, and any bankers that are listening, I apologize, you guys, but hey, you got stockholders, mm-hmm. you got people that you got to pay attention to. So you're not the bad guy here. You're just making business decisions. But what they would do is they'd put the interest on the back end of the loan and actually charge a monitoring fee. So unless it truly was a temporary financial hardship, and to be honest with you, most financial hardships since 2007 have not been temporary, that a loan
well,
modification...
it depends how you define temporary.
Sure, yeah, that's right.
Temporary could be 10 years.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right. But like I said, loan modifications, in my mind, were helping people circle the drain. They weren't getting that debt off their back. So I don't even refer people. So you know what? You want to do a loan modification? You do that on your own. Right. If you want to get rid of this debt and move on, this house that you bought, you thought was your dream house, it's not. But maybe the next one is. It's right. You got to think of it in that mentality. What you paid $250 for last year is now selling for $150. You know, reset, regroup, go buy that dream home again, this time for $160,000. <Right. laughs>
So who else is in this magic circle? We got the mortgage guy, we got the closing attorney, property appraiser, real estate guy. And you guys all got to know each other, trust each other, refer business to each other, yeah?
The only thing that's really changed in the last, I guess, probably 12 months is really we used to have relationships with appraisers, but no, we can no longer contact our appraiser directly.
Oh, it's against the rules. No more like giving them tickets to the ball game. No, that's done with.
Hey, man, we need an extra $5,000 on this one. Can you help us out? You know, no, that doesn't happen anymore.
No more of those, which is wow. It's good and bad. You know, we, you know, obviously tend to think it's probably the worst for the consumer, but you know, it's one of those necessary evils that we have to deal right. with.
Interesting. That's because they get something kind of like that in the pharmaceutical world. There's a lot less that lobbyists can do with politicians or politicians. Yeah.
Now that's never going to change.
Yeah, but there's some new rules. I'm sure they have found an end run around it, and the brown envelopes are still flying. And then in the pharmaceutical world,
they used to schmooze the doctors and give them.
Yeah, they have very little spending, I think, now. They can't spend on the doctors.
Right. And so in your world, it's harder to get to the property appraiser. That's frowned upon.
Yeah, we're not even allowed to talk to them. We order through a management system, and from there, it's
out of your hands.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like I said, there are business relationships, just like in any industry. And now, like I said, Brad and I are kind of on the same team. We all want to know that real estate agent because I tell you, like you said, you mentioned something about weeding out some of the people that didn't do it. It was a hobby for them. They were doing other things.
Right. It was like, how many of these, I don't want to stereotype, but there was a lot of ladies that were real estate agents because they're somebody in their tennis team. You know, they would hook them up and sell one house a year, and then they were real estate agents.
Like I said, as far as a stereotype, I won't comment on that, but I will say that the overall generalization is probably correct. People that were doing mortgages or maybe selling houses part-time aren't here. So those people that did stay in this career over the last 4 years, they're doing something right. And those are the kind of people that Brad and I want to show that we're professionals.
Right.
Those are the people that we want.
So the hobbyists are kind of weeded themselves out, and this is now the career people are the career
true
closing attorneys, the career mortgage people, and the career
or the stubborn idiots who just couldn't get another job in time. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's where we stay.
Well, just to throw a number out there, I think 2007. I think there was 470 some thousand mortgage originators. Now the number's around 75,000. So it kind of show you how that number's decreased over the last couple of years.
When times were slow, end of 2008, I would get the Georgia Department of Banking and Finance has like a list of everybody that's licensed to do mortgages, and I just started cold calling. And I'm not kidding. Every other one, they were no longer in business. So when somebody would answer, I would always say, "Congratulations, we're still here."
Now, when you were cold calling, you're trying to get on their radar because you want them to use you as a closing attorney, and you talk to them about your patent-pending process,
right? Yeah. Well, honestly, it's being a small fish, definitely in a very large pond in 2008. That's exactly what I did. I was reaching out to other individual mortgage brokers. They call that the hustle. That's what the kids are calling it these days, and that's what we did to survive. So
you must have done something right by Brad.
I did, and only a couple of brown envelopes had to exchange hands. Yeah. Just teasing real estate settlement procedures enforcement.
And then you both need to either make those calls or find some sort of vehicle, send ballgame tickets or something to real estate agents, because they can really help you out too, right?
It's all about relationships. Every facet of my business, we got introduced through a mutual friend. You know, sat down, you know, got along, and, you know, and then...
You have the same bookie. We talked about it.
That's exactly. Right, yeah.
You can, we don't have FCC regulations.
That's right. We can say whatever we want. This is great.
But it's, at the end of the day, you leverage relationships, you meet people, you know. I don't do anything outside of my network of people. It's, you know, utilizing the people that I know to get introduced to different people. Right. And that's exactly how we met, and that's how I've met probably 95% of the people that I work with and do business with.
Well, why don't you share what's the best way if somebody's interested in a mortgage and wants to jump into that network, what's the best way of getting a hold of you?
Well, obviously, give me a call at my work number, 678-578-7611, or you can access my website, which is www.brad-hartman, and that's HARTMAN.com. Any one of those ways, you can contact me, and I'd love the opportunity to help anybody out with either a purchase or a refinance that I can.
And Brad, if I could toot your horn, just another thing that you do that is not done by a number of mortgage professionals is you take a significant interest in real estate agents' listings. You try to help them promote those things. Talking about how do we get that business other than calling and say, please help me, I'm still here, let's do some business. What value can you bring to that real estate agent or that mortgage company? And now, a good process is always nice to say, but hey, we're kind of all in this together. How can I help you get more deals? Because that will trickle down to me. Brad does that exceptionally well with a web-based platform and just taking an honest and sincere interest in their business. It's a smart move. If that's where the money's coming from, sure. let's work on it together.
Exactly.
So my passion on a daily basis is literally trying to find ways to help people. A go-giver, attitude that understand that more value I can add, the more it's going to trickle down, the more more business I'm going to get from it.
And guess what? That's fun to do.
Yes.
That's the little secret that I'm learning is that it's fun to network. It's fun to provide a good service. It's once you kind of as any in any small business, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, boy, you should probably do
why
something
bother,
else.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Brad really, I think he digs it. I think he's in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
Unless he wins the lottery or the pick three or whatever it is. But
now, Matthew, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
Yeah, smoke signals. Anything that you want to send? No, we're at www.dickasonlaw, and that's DICKASONLAW. Main number 770-407-5247. Thanks for allowing us to get a little plug in. We appreciate that.
Sure.
And my book you can purchase at Amazon. No, I'm teasing.
All right, Stone, did you learn anything?
Hey, that's fun stuff, man. I'm going to go out and take a look at my garden.
Should buy a house.
We should.
How good they are.
Well, I'm going to see if your credit score can carry mine all the way through a deal.
We got to combine it and average it?
Add 100 or 200 points.
Right.
All right, well, that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. This is Lee Cantor signing off, and we will see you all next week. Bye.